Well, you can turn in your Bible to Proverbs 3 if you'd like. You know, Wesley mentioned a few weeks ago that he was going to do a short series on practical application things from the Bible, you know, things that would, you know, just be beneficial practically to us. And I think for the most part, it's stuff that probably we've been using for years, but maybe call it a refresher course, whatever. There's that song, I love to tell the story, the old story. Part of that song goes something like, I'm going to butcher it a little bit, but something like, no matter how many times I've heard it, I still love hearing it, that sort of thing. And it's the same with a lot of stuff in the Bible. So he asked me today if I would share a little bit about trusting God, you know, the practical, how practical that is. So I said, okay. So I thought if we got started in Proverbs chapter 3, if somebody's there, somebody would like to read verse 5, if you got it. Anybody? Okay, Terry.
Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding.
Right. And that's an instruction, and it's like any instruction. You can do it, or you can say no. You know, there's big signs beside the roadway, say speed limit 35. You make up your mind if you're going to obey it or not. It's the same with this. You know, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Okay, well, it's up to you. You know, I think God told Adam, don't eat of the tree. That was an instruction also. And he decided what he was going to do. And it's the same with us. You know, we read instructions. Then, you know, God's not forcing our arm up behind our back. There's the instruction. It's a good instruction. Just like, don't eat of the tree. That was a good instruction too. Day came when Adam decided, well, I think I'll do that. Well, didn't work out too well for him. You know, and the same with us. God gives us good instruction. It's really beneficial for us. And then it's up to us to decide what we're going to do with it. And the last part of that verse, where it says, lean not unto your own understanding, I saw a translation not that long ago where they, in modern English, a good way to translate that would be, and do not rely on your own intellect. I thought that really, to me, it really communicated well. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and do not rely on your own intellect. Was, you know, sort of like an option. You could do this, don't do that. So that's a real foundational verse. I'm sure it's nothing new to anybody. Psalm 112, you could turn to. Same sort of thing. Was thinking about, you know, for a long time I've thought about this book. I mean, I like this book a lot. I like the information that's in it. I like the instructions. I like the records. But I was talking to somebody not too long ago. I said, if it was just reading the words in this book, and it never really had, like, if there was a, I don't want to just learn this book. I want to have a real personal interaction with the guy who authored this book. I don't want to just read about how other people had a personal interaction with God, you know, but I can't have it, but look what they had. I'm not interested in that one little bit. I want to have a personal interaction with God, which really works out well because that's what God wants too. You know, so it's not like you got to talk him into something. And, you know, with trusting in the Lord, that's one of those things that a person who decides, yes, like that's one reason I love, you know, fellowshipping with you, because, you know, it's not like every room you're ever in is filled with people who have a great desire to trust in the Lord with all their heart. But this room is filled with people like that. And it just makes it very enjoyable to be with other people who have that desire, I'm trusting in the Lord with all my heart. It's a very different, and you know, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. It's very different being around people who trust in the Lord with all their heart versus being around people who rely on their own intellect. I got the answers, right? So here in Psalm 112, if you look at verse 7, it says, he shall not be afraid of evil tidings. His heart is fixed, trusting in the Lord. And in the next verse says, his heart is established. He shall not be afraid till he see his desire upon his enemies. But a question that could come up is, well, who fixed that person's heart?
The individual.
The individual. That person did. you know, nobody came along and said, I'm going to take your heart and I'm going to, you know, nail it to trusting in the Lord. It's an individual thing, you know, but this guy in verse 7, his heart was fixed, trusting in the Lord. Now, if you look at Isaiah chapter 26, another verse, I know it's familiar. Love to tell the story, the old story, you know, heard it before, love to hear it again. Isaiah 26. Who'd like to read verse 3? I saw Donnie's. Oh, you're scratching your head, huh? Okay, Ruby, can read it.
Thou shalt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee.
Yeah, and that perfect peace, you probably know from the Hebrew, it's the word peace, peace. You'll keep him in peace, peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusts in thee. So he was doing that thing like in, what was it, Proverbs 3:5. You know, he was trusting in the Lord with all of his heart. And that word stayed, in there in verse 3, it's the same word in the Hebrew that was used in Psalm 112, where it says, his heart is fixed, trusting in the Lord. Then the next part said, his heart is established. It's the same Hebrew word there. His heart was established. And here in Isaiah, it says, whose mind is stayed. Which sort of brings up the point, you know, when it says your heart, it's the heart or the innermost part of our mind. Sometimes, you know, you could have parts of your mind that are doing other things. But in the chewy caramel center, so to speak, of your brain, it's trusting in the Lord. Since we're here, you can go to chapter 31 of Isaiah. This is sort of like what it is not. You know, I mean, obviously, we're just sort of touching on some highlights, but there's a lot of verses about the other side, too. This is just one in the neighborhood. And who would like to read verse 1, Isaiah 31, 1? Okay, Connie.
Woe to them that go down to Egypt for help, and stay on horses and trust in chariots, because they are many, and in horsemen, because they are very strong. But they look not unto the Holy One of Israel, neither seek the Lord.
Right. So that's the other side. And the very first word in that verse sort of gives you the idea of what's coming your way. You know, woe. How many, by a show of hands, how many people in this room would like to have woe come unto them? Okay, well, in that case, we'll go with trusting in the Lord, right? So, but, you know, they got, this would sort of be a good example of people who relied on their internet, or intellect, whatever it is. I ain't got much of an intellect, I guess. But, you know, they go to Egypt for help. In this day and time, it would maybe sort of parallel. So they go to the only world superpower for help. Well, that's a very logical thing to do. You know, if you got a little bit of intellect, there's Egypt, there's the biggest superpower in the world. Well, if we need help, where would we go? It's a logical, intellectually thing to do. But the first word tells you where it's going to lead. Woe to them that go down to Egypt and stay on horses and trust in chariots. Ooh, the M1 A1 Abrams tank. You can't beat that. We got Apache helicopters. We're definitely, you know, they trust in chariots because they're many. And in the men on the backs of the horses, the horsemen, because they're very strong. But they don't even look unto the Holy One of Israel, never mind seeking the Lord. You know, they got all these intellectual ideas. They're all such great ideas. But the first word of the verse tells you where it's going. You know? And that word stay, they stay on horses. That's in the Hebrew, it's the same word as lean. It says lean not unto your own understanding or don't rely on. That's the same word stay. They rely on horses, you know, because they got all their great reasons, you know, because this and because that. But it's just intellectual reasons. They're very good reasons from an intellectual point of view. And we got the same, you know, situation. Not that we're looking at horses and chariots, but there's situations that come up where logically, this right here is the thing to do. And yet, you either know from Scripture or from direct communication, in this situation, that is not what you are to do. And then, you're in a situation where you can choose. Am I going to trust in the Lord? Or am I going to rely on my intellect? You know, it comes up. Look at Exodus chapter 4. I thought this was a great one. It doesn't have the word trust in it anywhere, but I thought it was a really good example. You know, it says in Philippians, it's God who works in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Well, Moses did not have God in him, but God would work with Moses. And this is really toward the very beginning of when God was just starting to work with Moses. He just had the thing in chapter 3 with the burning bush you're all familiar with, and God gave him some information, a real big overview, which was a remarkable quality of information that he gave Moses right off the hop. And then Moses' response to what God had said in chapter 4, great information, but in chapter 4 in verse 1, it says, And Moses answered and said, "But look, they're not going to believe me. They're not going to listen to my voice, for they're going to say, 'The Lord hasn't appeared to you.'" And God had told Moses already, you know, they're going to believe you. And Moses said, "That sounds like malarkey to me. It's not that. That's just not going to happen." So, verse 2, "And the Lord said unto him," unto Moses, "Hey, what's that in your hand?" "No, it's called a rod." "Oh, I'm sure the Lord didn't know that." You know? But it's nice how he, you know, like, God knows how to break the ice with an individual. You know, Moses had given Moses this information. Then Moses said, "That's not going to really work out. I know it's great you said that, but it ain't going to happen," in verse 1. So God says, "Hey, what's that in your hand?" "Well, it's a stick." Verse 3, he said, "Throw it on the ground." And Moses could have said, "What do I want to throw it on the ground for?" I mean, he could have, right? It's not made for throwing on the ground. It's my walking stick or my staff or whatever. But he didn't say, "What do I want to do that for?" It says, "And he threw it on the ground. And it became a serpent, a snake. And Moses ran away from it, fled from before it." Now, if you keep your finger here, we'll come back. Just probably one page back, chapter 2 of Exodus. This is just relative to Moses running away from the snake. In verse chapter 2, verse 11, it says, "It came to pass in those days, when Moses was grown, that he went out unto his brethren, and looked on their burdens, and he spied an Egyptian smiting a Hebrew, one of his brethren." Verse 12, "And he looked this way and that way, and when he saw that there was nobody around, he killed the Egyptian and buried him in the sand." Now, when you keep that in mind and you look back at chapter 4, verse 3 at the end of it, that's the guy that ran away from that snake. Seemed like a wimpy little guy? Not exactly. You know, he saw this guy doing something, you know, roughing up his brethren. He looked around. It doesn't say how he killed him, snapped his neck, I don't know. But probably not a scrawny little guy. Doesn't look like he was a real timid guy, does it? Snapped his neck, figure of speech. It doesn't say how he did it. Snapped his neck, buried him in the sand. You know, he's running away from this snake. Probably wasn't a black snake, right? I mean, Moses didn't grow up in New Jersey, you know, where a snake is a snake. No, there's different snakes. You can catch a black snake. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll read verse 4. "And the Lord said to Moses, put forth your hand and take it by the" what?
Tail.
Now, even somebody that doesn't know anything about a snake, that's one place you'll never grab a snake by the tail. Not unless you don't care if it bites you. And sometimes, I mean, I've done that. You know, my wife can attest.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if it's a garter snake, the thing's only 18 inches, you know it's not venomous. Go ahead and bite me, what I care. Grab it by the tail, you bite me all you want to. Wouldn't really do that with a copperhead. You know, I mean, it's a little different. It's a snake, but it's a different type. Moses running away. Moses grew up in the wilderness. Very likely he could tell which snakes, you know, and that one, bless you.
Thank you.
He ran away from, which gives you the idea this wasn't no garter snake. So that's the snake the Lord said, take it by the tail. You know, like grab that 7-foot diamondback rattler by the tail. You out of your mind? But that's what God told him to do. And at that point, Moses had a choice. Now, Moses didn't have Bibles, right? I mean, he wrote the first books of the Bible. He didn't have nothing to read. But at that point, Moses had a choice. I could trust in the Lord, or I could rely on my own intellect. My intellect is telling me, run away from the snake. The Lord's telling me, grab the snake, which means I'm going to have to go toward the snake. And don't just grab it, but grab it by the tail. He had a choice. I could trust what he says, which really sounds stupid to me, rely on my intellect, or I could say, I don't care what it sounds like, that's what he said. And in the middle of verse 4, he put forth his hand and caught it. And it became a rod And the fact that it became a rod in his hand again will tell you he didn't just catch it. He caught it by the tail because that's what God said to do. If he said, well, I think I'll catch it behind the head, that's not what God said. So a really neat thing. And it goes on. We know, a good bit about Moses. This was God working with Moses, because Moses had just said in verse 1, they're not going to listen to my voice. They're not going to believe you appear to me. God said, hey, what you got in your hand there? Throw it on the ground. Ran away from it. Go grab it by the tail. And he did it. And what would that do to you, to your mind? I mean, after that whole thing had transpired, and you grab that, we'll call it a king cobra, doesn't say. Call it that. He grabbed that king cobra by the tail, and it turned back into a staff. What would that do to your mind? One thing it would do, probably, you would realize, as stupid as that sounded, when God tells you to do something, it's going to have a really good result. It's the last thing you would do. But he did it because God told him to. And that's a good thing. I think like with Proverbs 3:5, it's a good illustration, not only of trusting in the Lord, but to make sure it came from the Lord. If he made his own idea up in his noggin and grabbed it by the tail, probably would have been a far different result. But God told him, he knew it was God giving instruction. He did it, even though it sounded stupid, and it worked. And one thing that could help to work in his noggin is, you know what? It really doesn't matter how stupid it sounds to my intellect. If it came from God, just do it. And the results are up to God. And God's not going to, leave us holding the bag. Like that thing in Ephesians 3, exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think. If a person obeys God, they might mentally perceive, well, this and that could be the result. And many times when they figure, well, this and that could be the result, it goes this and that and that and that and this and that and that and that and that, exceeding abundantly above all that they could ask or think. The important thing is, did God say it, and do I trust him? And in the results, who's that up to? God, the guy that gave the instruction. If you follow the instruction, you're not responsible for the results. You're responsible to follow. The one that's responsible for the results is the one that gave the instruction. Where are we going to go next? Let's go to, 2 Chronicles would be a good place. I like that also in that Exodus 4:1, where Moses wasn't like candy coating stuff. He said, they're not going to listen to me. It could sound like a disrespectful way to talk to God. Okay, it could sound that way, but there's plenty of places. Like Peter when he's on the housetop. And God showed him that vision, right? Peter killed, I'm sorry, 2 Chronicles 20. Did I tell you the chapter? Okay, 2 Chronicles 20. When God told him on the housetop, he showed him that vision. And Pete said, not so, Lord. I ain't doing that. And then he gave him his good reasons why. It sounds disrespectful. But these people, they loved God. They genuinely did. Moses did. Peter did. Lots of others we could read about. They loved God, but they weren't like... they were just being honest. This is, they weren't being disrespectful like Jonah when he did that stuff. He loved God like crazy. God said, go this way. He said, I ain't doing that. And he went that way. But God still worked with him. The very last verse in that whole book, God's still working with Jonah. He knew Jonah loved him. And God will do the same thing with us. It's not like, well, if you make a mistake, well, now you're done. No. God still works, and we see this a lot in the Bible, where people made mistakes, God still worked with them. Because in their heart, trust in the Lord with all your heart, they really wanted to do what God wanted them to do. You know, they slipped on a banana sometimes, okay. But God, you know, as long as they had that craving, that desire, God was still there with them, like he was with Moses. And they were honest with God. They didn't try to put rose-colored glasses on. Oh, no, I'm fine. This is in 2 Chronicles 20 is a great, we'll just read one verse here. Who would like to read a verse? Read a verse, yeah. Okay, Perry, verse 12, please.
O our God, wilt thou not judge them? For we have no might against this great company that cometh against us. Neither know we what to do, but our eyes are upon thee.
Now, is that an honest prayer? You know, the guy was just, and he was not praying this in a closet. This was the king of Israel, or Judah, whichever one it was, Judah. And he was praying in front of everybody. Ain't that what you, wouldn't you love? Here's Donald Trump at the inauguration. God, this country is so bleeped up from stem to stern. You know, we have no might to correct this situation. You know, neither, and we have no idea what to do. That's what you love to hear your leader say, right? There's no way we can overcome these problems and we don't know what to do. Well, I'm glad I voted for you. You know, and yet this was what Jehoshaphat said. And it was the truth. He wasn't being negative. He was just telling the truth. You know, if you read the record, there's a huge, huge army. And, you know, it'd be like, here comes 500 Arnold Schwarzeneggers, and there's three of us, and we're like, you know, Doogie Howser. You know, it's just telling the truth. There's a whole bunch of people. They're really strong. We got three scrawny guys here. We don't have the ability. We don't even know what to do. And if you finish reading the record, you know, God stepped in, people operated in spirit, and problem was solved. And it was solved in a very wonderful way. You read later on, it took them 3 days to carry away the spoil of the people that were going to come and carry away their spoil. The people all died, and it took them 3 days to carry all the flat-screen TVs and Maseratis and all that stuff away. It was a pretty good turnaround. But he said, our eyes are upon you. You know, they were trusting in the Lord with all their heart. They were not leaning to relying on their own intellect. And it's a good, you know, we can learn from that. Like God said in manifestations today, and it's throughout his word, we can trust in him. We can rely on him. He'll uphold us. If you look at 1 Samuel, pardon me, chapter 23. 1 Samuel. We're just going to read a couple verses here. Again, just another situation. And this is where one person helped another person, you know, who needed some help in their noggin. Let us read the verses. 1 Samuel 23 and verse 15, it says, and David saw that Saul was come out to seek his life. Saul, you know, is the king. And David was in the wilderness of Ziph in a wood. And Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David into the wood and strengthened his hand in God. Doesn't mean he gave him one of them vice grip things, you know. He strengthened his hand, you know, the hand representing the actions produced by the hand. He strengthened David, like, I can do what God wants me to do. He strengthened him in God. Now, how did he do that? What did he use to strengthen David's hand in God? Any ideas? Words. That's what he used. He used words. And the words he spoke, you can read about this guy, Jonathan, in chapter, I think it's 14 of 1 Samuel. This guy had the Spirit of God, Jonathan did, and he was operating it. And probably that had something to do with how and why he could strengthen David's hand in God. David needed to hear such and such words. Jonathan knew these words are what David needs to hear. Jonathan gave those words to David, and it made David stronger in his God. And David was running for his life. Here was the king out looking for him with, you know, all these guys, these Navy SEALs and Green Berets and all the rest. And here's David, you know, and Jonathan says, arose, and, you know, the rest of what it says there. If you look at chapter 30 of 1 Samuel, similar situation with a little bit of a difference. Chapter 30. It says in verse 6. Well, who'd like, anybody like to read a verse? If you don't, I'll read it. Okay, Alan, verse 6.
And David was greatly distressed, for the people spake of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters. But David encouraged himself in the Lord his God.
Right. So again, similar situation. They're talking about giving him a, what do they call that necktie? A Sicilian necktie?
Colombian.
Colombian? Okay. You know, they're talking about giving David a Colombian necktie. And if you read the record, it's understandable why they were talking that way. Which didn't make anything any better for David. You know, I understand why. Well, a Sicilian necktie or Colombian necktie, it's still, for whatever reason, it still is what it is. And it says David was greatly distressed. And that's something that's beneficial also. I forget that word distressed. I think it's it means like a narrow. We talk about the Straits of such and such. I think there's a Straits of Magellan, I think is one. Okay, it's where here you got this big old wide ocean, and then here you have a landmass, and here you have a landmass, and it's just a little strip of water that goes in between. Well, it's narrow. We have the saying, stuck between a rock and a hard place. Mm-hmm. That's this word distressed, basically. He was greatly distressed. He was in a squeeze. You know, he, on the one hand, Saul is seeking his life. On the other hand, his own men are talking about giving him a Colombian necktie. And here's David, you know, and all of their wives, all of their children had been taken, including David's wives and his, if he had any kids at that time. He could understand why they're talking about giving him a Colombian necktie, which didn't make it any better, that he understood why. And it says in the end of the verse, but David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. Before, in the other record, Jonathan strengthened his hand in God. And it's the same word, that word strengthened in 1 Samuel 23:16. It's the same word as this word, encouraged, here's in the Hebrew. Same. And a thing about this word, it's really neat too. The same word is translated hardened a lot of places in the Old Covenant. Like where it says Pharaoh's heart was hardened. Same word as the word encouraged and strengthened. That got me for a little bit. How in the world could you translate that same word encouraged and strengthened and hardened? Like Pharaoh hardened his heart. Well, the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart. And then it hit me. You guys, more guys than gals, sorry, but you know, military stuff. If we still have them, missile silos, where they're hardened silos. You know, you got those intercontinental ballistic missiles. Most of them have nuclear warheads. They're set down inside of silos. Looks like, oh, nice little planting. That's a nice little planting until somebody pushes a button. That planting blows up. Here comes an ICBM flying out. But the silo is hardened so that if the enemy learns the location of that silo and they can drop a missile right on top of that silo, when that missile explodes, the idea is that that missile cannot penetrate that silo to get to the missile that's inside of it. And the reason that it cannot penetrate is because that is it's a hardened silo. You're here in World War II, they had hardened bunkers. So if a bomb dropped right on top of it, the people inside were still safe. And to be encouraged in God, to be strengthened in God, like that hardened missile silo or the hardened bunker, it makes it impervious to attack from the outside. If we have strengthened in God, we can make ourselves, if we decide to, impervious from thoughts from the other source. Oh, that's not going to work. God said it, but it's not going to work. We can, if we stay, our mind, stay. Then, like in Luke 4, when the tempter came to Jesus, well, if you're really the Son of God, do this. And he always responded with information that God had given. He had, by his own free will, made his mind impervious to those thoughts penetrating his mind and lodging in his mind by his own free will. And we can do the same thing. And that was like Jonathan strengthened David's hand in God. David encouraged himself to make his mind impervious, hardened in the sense that impervious to the thoughts of, no, this is not going to work. You know, that's part of that stayed mind too, which helps us to trust. You know, I think of that thing, like the great principle which we were taught, all of us in this room. Part of that, what's called the great principle is, you know, God, who is spirit, teaches his creation in you, which is now your spirit, and your spirit teaches your mind. And then it goes on. That's the part. There's no problem with God, who is spirit, teaching his creation in you, which is now your spirit. There's no problem with, you know, yours, or I'll put my spirit teaching my mind. What comes into question is my mind willing to be taught? I mean, I was in school, you know, and sometimes I was willing to be taught, sometimes I was not. And when I was not willing to be taught, the teacher could give the greatest lesson that could be given. I'm not learning it. Nothing wrong with the teacher. It's the student. Same with great principle. Is my mind willing to be taught? You know, if I make my mind impervious to those thoughts, all that God's word is not going to work, it's going to fail, that's going to help my mind to be in a more teachable state than if I just allow anybody to tromp through my mind that wants to. It's not going to really help me to be, you know, your spirit teaches your mind, but my mind is so far out to lunch, there ain't much teaching going to take place. You know, nothing wrong with a teacher, nothing wrong with God, nothing wrong with the gift of the Holy Spirit. It's me, oh Lord, you know, I'm out to lunch or whatever. And this stuff like trusting in the Lord has a real practical, you know, application, which we know that, you know, but that's just one of them. You know, and it says David encouraged himself. Part of it is he made his mind impenetrable. I'm not accepting this information that God is not going to take care of me. Oh, but what about this? Oh, but stay. There's a guy, I think probably everybody here knows him, Dave Doering. We had the intermediate class out of his house last year. And he has this black lab. What's his dog's name? You remember?
Ranger.
Figures, right? So, and David, you know, he trains this chocolate lab. So he, part of his deal was, and he had it trained for some time, so every morning when he'd come down for coffee, he would make his coffee, he'd put the Ranger's food in the dish, put the food dish there, and say, Ranger, stay. And that dog was so, then he would fix his coffee, and if it took him 3 minutes or 5 minutes, that dog wouldn't move. And then before he went up to go get ready for work, he'd say, eat, or whatever the command was for it to eat. Well, one day, he forgot to give it the command to eat. So he gets done making his coffee, for what, maybe he's in a big rush, I don't know. He goes upstairs, he shaves, you know, he gets dressed, does his tie, whatever, brushes his teeth, comes down, he's getting ready to leave, and there's Ranger still sitting there with a puddle of drool on the floor, and that dog food was 5 feet away. He's like, oh my gosh. And I thought, wow, what a great example. Like for us, with our minds, mind, stay. And it was 30 minutes later, I forget how long it was, that dog had not budged. He had to get paper towels to mop up the puddle of drool under that dog's mouth, but that dog had not moved. I thought, wow, you know, that's a great example of, you know, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Don't rely on your own intellect. Don't trust in the horse's chariots. Oh, but, stay. You know, and it's our mind, and that will be very helpful for us to help us to trust in the Lord, because it's our minds. We better button it up, I guess. A lot of other scriptures. How about we look at Acts chapter 27? We'll get to the grace administration, see if it still applies. Oh, I forgot to bring... Oh, well. I was going to bring the working translation. Some of this stuff is got better info, but I forgot to bring it. Anyway, Acts chapter 27. Somebody like to read a verse? Okay, Donnie?
Anyone?
Yeah, just pick a verse. Like, thump your finger. First, as long as you thump it on verse 20, we'll be good.
Okay. 27:20. And when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared, and no small tempest lay on us, all hope that we should be saved was then taken away.
Right. That sounds like David was greatly distressed, right? Does this sort of sound like a situation of great distress? You'd say so. If you got working translation, that book, if you look at it, that word taken away in verse 20, if you go down to verse 40, it says, and when they had taken up the anchors, it's, I forget now exactly how it is. I was going to bring it and I forgot. But it's they, what the hell was that? It was basically they cut the ropes. It says they took up the anchors and committed themselves into the sea. It says something in the working translation like they I can't think of the word. It's like they cut the rope on the anchors and left them in the sea. Mm. Not committed themselves unto the sea. They cut the anchors and cut the ropes up there and left the anchors in the sea. And then, you know, they loosed the rudder bands, which I think something like cut them also. They just said, you know, whatever happens is what happens. That's the same word taken up is the same word that was used in verse 20. All hope that we should be saved was taken away. Pretty much, here's hope, and they just cut the rope. There's nothing left. You know, like they cut the ropes and left the anchors in the sea. Here was all hope that we should be delivered. At that point, they just cut the rope. Yeah, it's been a good life. You know, this is it. It's the end of the road. You know people or have heard of people that, you know, just got to that point and said, well, it was a good life. You know, what are you going to do when you get to that point? Are you going to suck your thumb and curl up in the corner and say, well, it was a good life. We'll see the Lord when he comes back, and that's it. And that's pretty much, you know. And it's interesting to me also, it does not say, the last part of verse 20, it does not say all hope that they should be saved was then taken away. It says we. The writer of the book of Acts was in that same boat, literally and figuratively. You know, it says all hope that we should be saved was then taken away. The rope was cut. Well, it was a good life. You know, then the record goes on. Angel stood by Paul. Situation changed. You know, and the end of the book of Acts was not here in this verse. You know, so again, a situation where it was so bad that there was no hope left. And that's a good record, you know, from a practical sense of, even in a situation where it's hopeless, and this would qualify, if all hope is taken away, then it's hopeless. Even in that hopeless situation, those people were helped in a situation where it was not possible for them to have help. But God stepped in and did so. And that's good for us. You know, like, if I rely on my own intellect, I could say, well, cut the rope. There's no hope. You know, it's got to this point. I was hoping that this would not happen, but since this one other thing did happen, okay, it's all over with then. That's the situation that they were in, and God still delivered them. So if I get into a situation like that, if you get into a situation like that, I can still, if I choose to, I could still trust in the Lord with all my heart and not rely on my own intellect. I could still have that hardened bunker, so to speak, impervious to thoughts saying, no, God's word is not going to work in this situation. No, I can still make my mind stay. You know, and it's a great, like, trusting in God is a terrific, from the looks of things, you know, produces some pretty good results. There's other verses you could read, but, you know, those are some where, you know, trusting God, it's a good practical application thing, which we do. But, you know, again, it's not hurtful to review information that we already know, you know, and it can be very helpful. And I just thought those were some things about trusting in God. You know, practical application. It's not like reading in a book where other people did it. Well, okay, yeah, we can read in a book where other people did it, but there's lessons to be learned when we read what happened between God and those other people. So, again, grateful to be in a room with people who do that. And I love you.